Welcome into the CHGO White Sox post-game show, coming to you live from Studio B of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm your host, Sean Anderson. Alongside me is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him at Eknerwall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. Follow the show at CHGO_White Sox. We're being produced today by Sarah.
Hello.
Hello. And we will be later joined from Guaranteed Rate Field by Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. If you haven't liked the video yet, like the video. Subscribe to the CHGO Sports YouTube channel. We got a live, I believe, watch along, right? For the Bulls playing? I think I saw something like that.
I know it's pre and post. I'm 100% sure pre and post.
I think they're going out. I think they're going all out for this. So go tune in with Dave, Matt, and Will after this. We got you covered for all of you Chicago sports fans. We got two games to recap. The White Sox did win. The last game you saw, the White Sox did win 2-1. So, hey, we'll take it. Let's go. The White Sox now have three of those bad boys on the year. They're 3-16?
15.
15?
You're disrespecting them. They only played 18 games.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure.
How disrespectful.
3-15. Wow. What a ride. Let's start with game one. They lost 4-2, and they had a lead. And that lead went very quickly to Salvador Perez. I know you have a lot to think about it.
I do.
But let's talk first on how it started, mainly Jonathan Cannon. He made his major league debut. He is wearing number, I believe it's 48 for the Chicago White Sox. And Jonathan Cannon went 5 innings and looked pretty sharp.
Yeah, really sharp. I was very impressed by the young man's poise and his stuff, actually. The changeup I think he threw to, I forgot who it was. It was Maldonado. To end the third
well, Maldonado's inning. On our team. I think it was Melendez.
Melendez,
because it was a lefty, because it faded out to that right-handed batter's box.
It was, Cannon fadeaway changed K's Pasquatch to end the third inning. So, okay. Vinny Pasquantino, very tough hitter, as White Sox fans know. His hitting was usually on point, but he made him look real stupid. A lot of different pitches he was throwing, and he looked like he was commanding most of them. 1-2-3 inning in the first. Of course, the big blow for him, the only run he gave up, was courtesy of a Dominic Fletcher slipping in the outfield. It wasn't caught in the air. It was called a double. That runner eventually scored on a single, and that was his only blemish. And other than that, I thought the kid was sparkling, like just like the kid before, the day before, Nick Nastrini. They have three young pitchers who made their major league debut this year with a starting debut with Garrett Crochet, Nick Nastrini, and now Jonathan Cannon, that came out and looked the part in their first start. While we've had other people who have pitched in the major leagues before, a.k.a. Soroka, Fetty, and you saw Chris Flexen warming in the bullpen later in the game today, who didn't look at the part. So I'm very, very encouraged by the pitching. The pitching for the White Sox, especially starting pitching, has been a problem. But if those three guys are in this rotation, I feel a little bit better. Because at least if they get hit, they're learning. They have a future in the league with the Sorokas of the world and the Fettys and the Flexens of the world. Who cares?
Yeah, Jonathan Cannon doesn't need to go to Korea to sharpen up. You know, he's trying to make it in the big leagues. Like, yeah. This isn't a guy that has gone through the ups and downs of Major League Baseball just yet.
And good-looking cats, too.
He's only 23 years old.
Jonathan Cannon, good-looking cat. Nastrini, good-looking cat. Garrett, not so much, but doesn't need to be.
Oh, damn. What? I mean, I've heard all about this that, you know, I haven't been actively dating in 10 years, but women want, you know, you can't be 6 feet or shorter. So, I mean, 6'6" is, you know.
Yeah, and women act like there's like
too shabby.
These dudes are out here making their heights. It's like, oh, I'm going to be 6'7". No.
My rule of thumb is they have to be at least taller than me. And I'm 5'6".
And Garrett Crochet is definitely taller than 5'6". From what I figured
out.
And I think Nick Nastrini and Garrett Crochet or Jonathan Cannon are taller than 5'6". So there you go. Maybe not
tall
Andrew Vaughn.
5'10". Oh, yeah, tall 5'10". Yeah, Andrew Vaughn. Yeah, you couldn't date Andrew Vaughn. Sorry, Sarah.
Hit the thumbs up button. He's married anyways. average exit velocity for Cannon today was 92 miles per hour. Didn't get a ton of whiffs, only 5 whiffs today. But he was able to get some called strikes, 13 called strikes. And the whiff pitch that I thought he was going to have was his four-seam fastball. On 6 swings, he had 5 foul-offs. So I think that's still, I'll take it. Those are 5 strikes right there.
Yeah.
I don't think his stuff was dominating, but he's 23, and I think that his slider is very interesting. That pitch graded out at a 111 stuff plus from at TJ Stats on Twitter. So that's an above average major league pitch. The fastballs, the cutter, and the sinker were around average. I think it was 101 and 99. And you mentioned the changeup. When it was used, he saved it for those lefty hitters, but he was able to use it in nice spots. So
a run.
Able to go five innings. We haven't seen that a ton from White Sox hitters or White Sox pitchers this year. So I'm all for Jonathan Cannon getting a ton of rope and him just being in the starting rotation for the rest of the year. Why not?
Like, I don't know like why you would see those performances by Mastrini and Cannon say, we got these other guys. Because right now, as it stands, don't they have six guys in the rotation, even though Flexen was relegated to the bullpen? Like, they still have a lot of people in there. Like, it's Crochet, Fetty, Soroka still there, and then you got Cannon and Mastrini, and then if Flexen's there, you have another person.
Well, we
and then you also going to have Mike Clevinger coming up here by the end of the month.
Well, did you call your sixth person was Clevinger, right?
No, well, we'll be
or was
Clevinger.
You're thinking Flexen.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, it seems like he's in the bullpen, and then also too, like it does feel, even though it hasn't been said, there's going to be some sort of management for Garrett Crochet. I don't think that they have announced it, but it does feel like
smart.
Once Clevinger comes up, I think Crochet will hit the 10-day IL, not because he's got some specific injury. It's more maintenance. So I think we might see some more days off between starts for Crochet. This is just me theorizing, but I don't see a reason why not to start Jonathan Cannon. I don't see a reason why not to start Nick Mastrini. And if anyone out of those six that I'm saying don't start, obviously it would be Clevinger, but I don't have that choice. It'd probably be Soroka. Soroka is just not showing you as much as you really want. We saw Fetty in game two. We'll get to that later. But we do have some video from Vinny Duber on Jonathan Cannon after his major league debut. So let's hear from the rookie after his first major league start.
What was the debut experience like for you?
I mean, what a day. This has really been awesome. Just a dream come true, really. I mean, I was standing on the back of the mound before the game started, like just taking it all in, like was just everything I've dreamed about coming true. And it was awesome to have my family and friends here to share it with.
Who was here from your like support system?
Everyone. I mean, I've so many people to thank for just getting me here. My immediate family, like my girlfriend, two of my best friends, my aunt, my uncle, just everyone that was here has just been so meaningful in my life in one way or the other.
What was it like having to wait the extra day to get out of there?
It's just baseball is what it is. Can't control the weather. But I was happy that we got to play this afternoon. I know it looked like it might rain this afternoon, but shoot, just go out there and compete and had a fun time doing it.
How do you think you did from a pitching standpoint? How would you assess what you did today?
Yeah, I mean, I thought I did well. I thought I executed a lot of pitches to a very aggressive lineup and a lineup that's doing well right now. So, I mean, I would say that I was able to really execute my game plan going in.
Do you think you showed what you can do enough to earn more shots at this level?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm taking it one start at a time, and they called me up to start today, and I thought that I was able to put my best foot forward, but in regards to future starts or whatever, like I'm just trying to take it one start at a time, and I was really happy with the performance today, and I thought my stuff was good.
How did you find out that you were going to get this opportunity?
Yeah, I heard on Friday, I think, and they said that I was going to start this game, or supposed to be yesterday, obviously, but obviously super exciting to hear that and have your name called, and was stoked to get my family up here and share that moment with me.
Did you and Nick talk about this at all? That I mean, it's very rare that two guys make their debuts back to back like that.
Yeah, I mean, I remember I knew on Friday, and then I hadn't heard about Nick yet, but I showed up to the locker room in Jacksonville and saw his locker empty, and I was so happy. I've never been happier to see a locker empty. It was awesome because I knew it was going up. And I was happy that we got to share the last 24 hours, 48 hours together and experience it together.
Between you and him, you got Jordan Leisure here. Like, what do you guys think you're showing in terms of what's to come for this organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think that all of us are just, once again, just trying to take it one step at a time and just show that we can help this team win and put this team in positions to win. And I feel like we've done that. And it's really just going out and just finishing games. We I was really happy with my performance, and then Nick obviously did really well. Leisure's been outstanding, so it's we have a very exciting system, and just watching the lower levels, a bunch of guys down there are so good and have so much potential, and they're really fun to watch.
What's it like to go from Georgia to draft a short time now, you know, minor leagues and major league debut?
Yeah, it's a little bit surreal. It really is. And I mean, it's kind of cliche to say, but it like it's the same game, and it's fun, and I love doing it. I love showing up to the field every day, and it's really just that love and passion for the game that's kind of carried me this far.
How did you kind of go about managing your emotions and excitement and all the butterflies and all that?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to take it in as much as I could. I kind of stood on the back of the mound before the game started and just kind of looked around and tried to take it all in, but it's it was very, very enjoyable.
And this time with your family, what was that like?
I mean, it was everything that I've dreamed about, and greeting them and giving them hugs, and how influential they've been in my life and supporting me. And I know there are a lot of families out there that go to travel ball events all summer long, high school, like whatever it may be, and it's a lot of commitment. So to kind of see all that work kind of come to fruition and see them after was a wonderful moment.
The suite they were in, it was like right above dugout. Did you look up at any points as you were walking on?
I saw them when I was walking in after I'd finished my warm up, but I was like, man, they got some good seats.
You talked a lot about how you worked on your changeup this offseason to give you something to just pass with it today. How much do you feel like it's progressed from your last year?
I think the confidence in it has gone up a lot, and that kind of just speaks volumes to the work that I put in this offseason and in spring training with Cats, with Banny, with everyone, and just really trying to hone in on what's going to make me the best pitcher. And focusing on that changeup this offseason was a huge point, and it worked. It was going well today, and I think it just shows that work that's been put in.
You're the first starting pitcher from your draft class to start in the majors. Did you see it happening this quickly, or is it kind of surprising that this opportunity came this way?
I don't know if it was surprising. I mean, I think it was surprising, like, when I first got the call and the initial kind of shock of it, like, oh wow, like, but I knew deep down that I was ready and that I can obviously perform on this stage, and it's just been exciting.
And Herb, you kind of mentioned that you know, he's third round draft pick in 2022. Is that a little quick? And James Fegan asked him there. I don't know if it's too advanced, especially for a team that is this bad. You know, I mean, if they were, 2-14, I don't think they'd be calling up Jonathan Cannon this quickly. But, you know, it goes a little awry, and I think it's the right stage for him because this is supposed to be a defensive team.
Yep.
And it does seem like the biggest issue for Cannon is avoiding those walks. And as long as he's not putting extra guys up, hey, maybe he'll give up some hard contact here and then, but he's just trying to avoid the barrel of the bat. And I think that's a type of a young pitcher that could survive in the major leagues because he doesn't have that dominant stuff, but hopefully he'll be able to induce weak contact, and the Sox behind him will be able to play decent defense, unlike Dominic Fletcher falling in the center field.
Yeah, I mean, as I said yesterday, you don't get better at doing something unless you do the something. And he wants to be a major league pitcher and starter for a good long while. So let's give him the longest rope he can have to be this better major league pitcher and go out and fail a little bit. Because, you know, he's a rookie with not a lot of acclaim. What, he's like 11th prospect in the White Sox system right now. So he's going to be good sometimes. He's going to show what he showed today. And sometimes he's going to get hit around. He's going to get hit hard. So let him do that. Allow him to see what works in the major leagues and what doesn't, and adjust to what isn't working. And have a whole season of 5 ERAs. I don't care. Blow it up. Make it bad. But next year you will know, like, okay, was Jonathan Cannon good in his rookie year? Yay, nay. Is he going to be good moving forward? What can we tinker on him to get him better in next year? Because, like I said before, there is nothing that you're going to get from Michael Soroka after 2024. I appreciate his efforts. I appreciate him coming back from his injuries. But what we've seen already in four starts is not great. Same thing with Chris Flexen. Those guys are cash. And when Mike Clevinger takes the representative 20 starts that he does, he'll be fine. But who cares? You know, what's that going to do for the White Sox? These are the people like who was asking yesterday, was Lexi asking, why should I be watching this team going forward? These are the reasons. When you get Chris, or when you get Nick Nastrini on the bump, and when you get Jonathan Cannon on the bump, and then when you get Garrett Crochet on the bump, these are the reasons. And lately, too, I hate to say it because I have dogged the man for years. Gavin Sheets.
My guy.
That man's hitting the ball hard.
Hell yeah, he is.
Hard.
We're going to talk about game two in a second where Gavin Sheets hit the ball hard. We're going to take a break as well. Let you know about our friends over at Game Time. Game Time is the place to go when you want to buy tickets. They have the Game Time guarantee, which means if you find tickets for less in the same section or row, the Game Time guarantee means that you will get 110% of the difference. And Herb, when he tried out the Game Time guarantee, he got it in 12 minutes. So they have super fast customer support and they will get you the best deal possible. They don't want to make a typically frustrating event buying tickets. Yeah. Am I getting the right price? Am I getting the best seats? They want to take out that frustration and make it easiest for you. They have killer last minute deals, all in prices, views from your seats, and their best price guarantee. Game Time takes the guesswork out of buying. So go and browse through the Game Time events. I think the Bulls are currently hosting a play-in game. Maybe you can get some walk-in ticket prices right before the game. You could buy right before you walk in with Game Time.
That's the best time to buy the tickets because you can save up to 60% buying last-minute tickets for sports, concert, comedy, theater, and more. I bought some tickets up in Milwaukee for the 26th of this month where it's a zone deal, and usually it's about $120. I think I got them for about $88 each. The Brewers are playing the Yankees. I'm right behind the Yankees dugout. So this is the best time. If you're thinking about going to that play-in game, best time to do it, 60% off up to the tip, and then after an hour of the playing time, they still have tickets available on Game Time.
There you go. So take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code CHGO for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code CHGO for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed.
You know, when I'm chilling at the ballpark or just at home, nothing says summer to me more than Leinenkugel's Summer Shandy. I know you're saying to yourself, Herb, hey, man, I love Leinenkugel's Summer Shandy. I drink it every time I'm at the ballpark or if I'm doing, you know, a picnic, a cookout, things like that. But I want to drink Leinies year-round. What can I enjoy year-round? I mean, Sean's holding the Berry Vice, which is around year-round.
They're kissing. Oh. They make a perfect pair.
If you're across the border, you have Leinenkugel's Original, Light Lager, also Lakeside Cherry, Juicy Peach, the Berry Weiss we're just holding up, Northwoods Amber, and Dark Lager, and so many more, including Honey Weiss, which is made with real Wisconsin honey. And I know if you've tried any of the Leinenkugel offerings, you know that they bring the flavor for whatever occasion that you're celebrating. And for over 150 years, Leinenkugel has been combining German brewing traditions with Wisconsin innovation. You don't have to just pick one. Leinenkugel has popular variety packs that come in four flavors for you to try out. And also remember that Leinenkugel flavors life's simple moments with Leinenkugel's, the official craft beer of Chicago White Sox. Go to leine.com/CHGO to find delivery options near you. That's leine.com/CHGO or pick up Leinenkugel's anywhere they sell beer. Flavor the moment. Celebrate responsibly. The Jacob Leinenbrugel. The Jacob Leinenbrugel. I keep on saying cool. Jacob Leinenkugel Brewing Company. Yeah. Chippewa Falls.
Yes.
Yes.
Herb, do you know where they sell beer?
At Guaranteed Rate Field.
At Guaranteed Rate Field, where Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer, is joining us. Follow him at Vinny Duber. We just heard from Jonathan Cannon. We haven't talked about Game 2 just yet. What was the White Sox clubhouse after the win? They got their third win, Vinny. Yay! Was it loud in there?
They were pumped. Yeah. They were pumped. Hey, if they've played 18 games, they've only gotten to celebrate three wins, so they've got a lot of celebrating left over that they haven't done yet.
And Vin, you wrote on your White Sox Weekly newsletter that comes out Monday for diehards, and Kevin's mentioned it in the chat, about Sheets' work with Jim Thome. We haven't really gotten into the moments yet, like Andrew Vaughn's double and Gavin Sheets' homer. So did Gavin speak post-game? Did he bring up Jim Thome? Or is there anything Jim Thome-like about that swing, that home run swing from Gavin today?
I mean, the most Jim Thome thing about it is that it went out of the out of the ballpark that it was a home run. Jim Thome had quite a few of those moments, if you'll remember correctly. But no, I mean, listen, that's not an ongoing thing. He's not always, going, all right, another hit, and points up to the whatever suite Jim might happen to be in. I think Jim got an award this week, so I'm not sure he was at the ballpark this week. He was getting the Order of Lincoln, if I'm not misunderstanding that. But it was interesting. Jim Thome is part of the White Sox front office, and you see him at the ballpark quite regularly during the season, and obviously he's going to impart some wisdom on some of these guys, particularly during the spring, when he is in uniform as an instructor, and he gave some good advice to Gavin Sheets that kind of had to deal with his confidence and how he can keep that confidence high and kind of make the pitcher think that he's confident as well, which is helpful. And Gavin credited that, among many other things that happened this offseason and this spring, as helping him off to this good start. But he's the first to point out that it's early and that there's a lot of season to go, but he's definitely feeling as good as he's felt since becoming a Major League Baseball player. And certainly feels worlds different than he did last year when that confidence just wasn't there. And you're seeing the results, whether it's walks, whether it's, just base hits, or whether it's balls going out of the yard like they did today.
I saw the in-between games presser with Pedro Grifol, one of your media members, asked Pedro if he thought about pinch hitting Martin Maldonado in the seventh inning in the first game, where they're up, I think, 2-1 at that time. And he gave kind of a terse answer. He's like, we had the lead, so no, I trusted my guy putting down the numbers. Like, I know, I understand he's been with Martin for a minute now, but the numbers don't say he's good anymore. Nothing at the plate says he's good. The metrics on his fielding has been bad. Like, is Pedro watching the same game that we are? Because for my money, like, Corey Lee in that second game, throwing runners out, at least hitting, getting a walk, getting on base, he looks like the more professional catcher out there. And I know the veteran leadership goes into all the planning, but I gotta believe that Pedro has to see what we see.
He obviously does. He sees the game. He's got a better seat than anybody, right? Right in the top step of the dugout there. I think when it comes to Maldonado, it is important to remember that the White Sox didn't get him to hit, right? I mean, this guy didn't hit over 200 last year. Like, and they went out and purposefully added him after that was the case. Like, they knew full well where his bat was when they signed him. And so I think if you're like, oh, well, how could they possibly keep trotting him out there when he's hitting this way? I mean, I think they expected him to hit this way. That's not why he's here. The defense certainly is maybe a little bit of a different story, because I do think that they talked up his ability behind the plate during the offseason, even though the numbers last year weren't very good. I think they talked about a more longer track record of him being decent back there. And so far, we've seen a lot of stuff that kind of reminds us of the way Yasmani Grandal was playing behind the plate at times as he aged, while after being a catcher for many years. But I think really, at the end of the day, I think he is doing the main thing that they brought him here to do, and that's to work very well with the pitching staff. It's to work very closely with some of the younger pitchers as well. And listen, back-to-back major league debuts, that's what he did. And we've seen really positive results of him working with Garrett Crochet. We've seen positive results of him working with Michael Kopech, the way that he's able to handle those guys in-game, in the moment, as well as showing up to the ballpark and getting the game planning taken care of and all that stuff. He's not going to be an offensive positive this year, and I don't think anybody should expect him to be. The defense, yeah, it's a little interesting, and it might evolve over the course of the season, but I think right now he is doing what they want him to do in terms of working with the pitching staff, and I think they see that as a big time plus.
Does Martin Maldonado, Pedro, or Michael Kopech have a scouting report on Salvador Perez? Because a fastball down the middle, we all know, is deadly, and to call one is really dumb. So I was like wondering, in the eighth inning with the base open, two outs, a runner on third, why are you throwing balls to Salvador Perez? But I don't know. It's frustrating, because that game was in hand to win that game, and people are going to look back and blame Michael Kopech. He's just following orders. He's just throwing the ball down the middle. He called for a fastball, but we all know the scouting report on Salvador Perez is throw the ball in the stadium, he'll pretty much swing at it, because he's got like a 1% walk rate this year. So it's like, I don't know what they're looking at. It's frustrating to see the same guy beat the White Sox time and time again.
I think the important thing to remember, this is not a defense of that pitch call, of course, but the important thing to remember is what Sean talks about every time Michael Kopech steps on the mound, which is how elite level that fastball has been for him. Again, not saying that that makes it the end all be all. That's what you have to throw every time. And it's, you know, talking about, hey, go ahead, Salvi, beat it kind of thing. But at the same time, that's what the competition is. And when I guess you've got one of the best pitches in baseball, you have to be convicted in throwing it. I wouldn't advocate instructing Michael Kopech to miss the strike zone after what he did last year and the struggles that he had for it. Again, I'm not going to go ahead and defend that pitch call. It ended up turning the game around. It ended up being the reason they lost that game. But Michael Kopech has that unique weapon. He should be using it, right?
Yeah, there was a tight turnaround in between those games. Did Pedro address that play call or just be like, oh, that's Salvi?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's Salvi for you. I mean, the biggest thing with Kopech that I noticed today, I mean,
he called it a mistake. Pedro called it a mistake from Kopech, so maybe he didn't do what it was supposed to do. You know, it might have been called for a different location or something like that, but
I don't think it was right down Main. I don't think they like calling those pitches, hey buddy, throw it right down the middle. I mean, if it was an accuracy competition, he hit the middle of the plate, so I mean, that's good for him. I think the biggest issue with the fastball today that I noticed was you just weren't seeing those triple digits from Kopech. So you weren't seeing that increased velocity that obviously leads to whiffs, and you weren't seeing him locate high in the zone, making that tough angle for batters to square up, because when it is lower in the zone, you just get more vertical drop on it, you get gravity affecting it more, and it's easier for hitters like Salvador Perez, who hit fastballs for breakfast, to pick that ball up. And again, it was just middle. I mean, maybe if it's up, he swings and misses it. Maybe if it's up and in, he's able to foul it back or something like that. But yeah, Herb and I were like, oh, well, now it's time for 17 sliders. And then the first pitch is a fastball right down the middle, and Herb stole a page out of Matt Peck's book and threw his hat. So that was not good to see. Very, very, very brutal to see. Anything else from game one? We did play the Jonathan Cannon video in full, but was there anything else from game one that stood out to you before we move on to the Sox one?
Not particularly that's jumping out of my mind. Obviously, Paul DeJong had a good game. He was on base four times in game one and had three hits, ended up with five hits on the day in the, you know, for the doubleheader in total. And he's a guy that Pedro talked up as kind of doing a lot of work to kind of fix some stuff, you know, mechanically, and getting with the hitting coaches and that kind of thing. Paul talked a lot about kind of everything after the game, saying, you know, it's about mental approach. It's about the physical stuff. It's about the game plan. It's about watching the game in the game. So he kind of went through everything that you're supposed to do as a hitter to get on track. But hey, doing that and doing it the way you're supposed to do it, obviously is working for him in the last couple games. So he was a guy who was off to not a great start, just like everybody on this team. I think he raised his batting average something like 100 points today or something like that. So to get anybody going, whether it's him or anybody else, is positive for this team.
Yeah, he's slugging like 600, so we'll take it. Make sure you're hitting that thumbs up button. We got over 70 people watching, but under 30 likes. So hit that like. Give us a like spike, I believe, as the Bears guys say it. So hit that like button. We're going to take a break, let you know about our friends over at Circa and Chevy. We'll talk about the game to win for the Sox, and then we will get ready for the off day show tomorrow. So Herb, why don't you let us know about Circa?
At Circa, they have a tight money line splits, low hold model. Games will strive to be a minus 110 split on Circus Sports menu, unlike other sportsbook, which may use a minus 115 or minus 120 splits. Circus Sports keeps as little money as possible on large market bets, especially compared to other books. And at Circa, they don't limit their winning players based on their winnings. Every player has the same limits, unlike other books, who do limit their winning players. We encourage bettors to download and explore all other sport betting apps available and compare lines from each of those sports betting apps. There are real people behind the Circa Sports brand who resolve issues in a timely fashion, unlike the other books who use chatbots. And all aspects of the app are being run by the same team that runs the main Circa Sportsbook at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Download the Circa Sports Illinois app at circasports.com/Illinois-app to sign up today. Also be on the lookout for Circa events like parties and tailgates like the party we're going to have next week, when the Bears select Caleb Williams.
April 25th, it's sold out, but April 26th, you could still buy tickets. Our friends by Circa are going to be there.
Yeah, so enjoy that. If you or someone you know might have a problem with gambling, call 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537, or text GAMB to 833-234, or visit areyoureallywinning.com.
And we want to let you know about our friends over at Ray Chevy. Drive home a winner this April after visiting our partner, Ray Chevrolet. They're sharing their best offers of the year, so make your way over to Ray Chevy on Route 12 in Fox Lake to join in on the savings. As one of the top-selling Chevy dealers in the Midwest, you'll always be able to shop one of Chicagoland's largest inventories. Plus, you can find the perfect tailgating vehicle. For a limited time, they're offering 0% financing for 72 months on new Silverados with over 100 available. And to top it all off, they're pricing over 125 vehicles under $20,000. So get a great deal on a great car today over on Route 12 at Ray Chevy, and you can get a free oil change at Ray Chevy in Fox Lake when you mention CHGO. A free oil change. All you need to do is mention CHGO when scheduling your oil change. Start off the new year right and schedule it by April 30th. Visit Ray Chevrolet in Fox Lake or RayChevrolet.com. They've been serving the community since 1963. Find new roads. All right. So, Eric Fetty. Was there any chat about Fetty in the locker room? Didn't get the win, right? Because he didn't leave with a lead? Did he get the win?
I think he got the win, yeah.
Did he get the win? Okay, yeah. Eric Fetty gets the win.
They were up 1-0. They were up 1-0 at the time, I believe. He was very good today. Obviously got helped big time by that double play in the last inning that he pitched, because there was a guy on base, and then he gets the double play. The next batter just crushed a double into the gap, and so that would have been the game-tying run at the very minimum there. Even if Bobby Witt was the guy who beat out the double play on first base, probably would have scored from first base there, I would imagine. So that probably ended up being the highlight that stuck out for me. But, hey, remember what we heard from the White Sox in the offseason and in spring training, the reason they were so confident that Korean Eric Fetty was going to translate to the major leagues was because of that ground ball rate. And that's a big ground ball. That's what you need to get. There was a time there where he was just cruising. You know, he had a couple early walks in the first inning, but, I think he ended up with 5 strikeouts too. So he's getting it done a little bit. Obviously, I don't think he's been wildly impressive, but a game like today was definitely a step toward becoming a guy that can be counted on at the top of that rotation alongside a guy who we had big time questions about, Garrett Crochet, who has turned out to be kind of the ace of this staff. But Fetty might end up maybe the most reliable if he can continue to just kind of get outs and go through lineups. It wasn't a terribly long outing today, but Pedro, for one, was very impressed with what he was able to do, and Fetty was very, very happy with his performance today.
5 2/3, no earned runs, 3 hits, 5 Ks, 3 walks from Fetty, and then Michael Wacha in game 2, 6 innings, 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 4 Ks, and 2 walks. And then the thing with Fetty, you mentioned, I know fans aren't probably over the moon about him, but I think his ERA is 3.10 or less. So, I mean, he's getting the results. Yep. He's getting the ground outs. And I know he gave up, 4 homers to Cleveland, but there's not runners on when he's giving up those homers, at least. So, hey, silver lining of giving up 4 home runs is they're all solo shots. So Fetty's been nice. It's been interesting to watch. We've talked before you joined. It seems like Jonathan Cannon has the composure to be in a major league rotation. It seems like Nick Nastrini has the composure to be in a major league rotation. Is this leading towards Garrett Crochet getting some sort of rest with possibly a 6th starter coming up with Mike Clevinger seemingly going to be ready by May 1st? Am I off to speculate that?
I don't think you're off to speculate. I don't know that that's what's going to happen, but I think it's as good a guess as any right now in terms of how this is going to play out. Both Pedro and, like I mentioned yesterday, Chris Getz, who I talked to yesterday, very non-committal on Nastrini and Cannon sticking around. Nastrini is listed as a probable pitcher in the game notes for this weekend series in Philadelphia. But Pedro even today said they're going to take the off day tomorrow and try to figure it out. In my opinion, Nick Nastrini and Jonathan Cannon pitched well enough to stay, and there is no reason why you shouldn't be letting them continue their development at the major league level and continuing to give them a chance to at least prove whether or not they can be part of this thing in the long term. Obviously, Garrett Crochet falls into that camp as well. Eric Fetty's got a 2-year major league free agent contract. He's not going anywhere. And we know that Mike Clevinger is coming within the next couple of weeks. So how that's all going to play out in terms of the other guys that are here, that we had Chris Flexen warming up in the bullpen in the 9th inning in game 2 as Davey Garcia was locking down that 2-inning save. Michael Soroka. Yeah, you're riding on the Davey train there. How about this? I don't know how this hadn't come to me until today. Savvy Garcia.
Okay. All right. A little that bit works, of a stretch, but not, I like
hey,
it.
That
I
works.
Like it.
That works.
Hey, applicable today. But yeah, Michael Soroka has not been very impressive at all. But I don't know. I don't know how it plays out. I think any guess is a good one right now. But in my opinion, with what the White Sox are trying to do for the long term, I think Nastrini and Cannon got to stick around until they show you that, hey, they can't cut it here and they've got to go back down to AAA.
If you just take out the offensive things the White Sox did, I think if you ask Chris Getz or Pedro Grifol.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Giving up, what do they get, 5 runs total today in the whole afternoon, that would be ideal. But let's get back to the offense. Today they won a game 2-1, and then the first game they scored 2 runs. They bunt so many damn times. Like in the first game, they had Nicky Lopez running, stealing second, and then had Martin Maldonado bunt the ball right back to this pitcher. Like, I didn't get that process there. And then when I think it was Stratton was in the second game on the rocks, on the ropes, he was walking Gavin Sheets, I think, and he also walked Eloy Jimenez consecutively. Then you have the fifth hitter, Dominic Fletcher, come up, and he's looking like he's squaring up the bunt the first couple times. Like, I just don't get these strategy moves for a team that's struggling to score. Bunting prevents you from scoring more runs. So I like Pedro might have, you know, happy about this 2-1 victory, but the reason why you get 2-1 victories is because you're giving away outs, especially to pitchers on the ropes there. So that's just a statement, not really an actual question, Vinny, but you can go
ahead. Well, no, I will address it because he did bring it up after the game, and he talked about how that is something that they need to do. And I think he would entirely disagree with you, Herb. I think he would say that a team that is struggling to score runs needs every advantage they can get in terms of base runners and opportunities to score runs, right? And so I think putting a guy on third base, even if there is one more out than there was prior, I think to them looks like an opportunity that they didn't have before. If you see what happened in that exact situation, if my memory is correct, Dominic Fletcher tried to bunt. It ended up going to a full count. He ended up swinging away and flew out. The next batter up is Lenin Sosa, who hits into a double play, which if that bunt was successful, the double play can't happen, and maybe even a run scores. And granted, we're talking about ifs and buts and whatever, but the point being that I think he totally disagrees with you in saying that the bunting is a result of this team not scoring many runs. And to get just one more, you know, if a sacrifice means you get just one more run, that could make all the difference in the world, as we saw in the first game where one swing of the bat turned it from a one-run lead into a one-run deficit, right? And so, and even in the second game where Gavin Sheets' home run proves to be the deciding factor, just that one run. And so I think he's looking at the second game as probably the way that this team is going to have to win games a lot of the time this year, if they're going to win games this way, is by playing decent defense, cough, cough, with the exception of Tanner Banks throwing the ball in the center field, by having really good pitching, which you saw from Eric Fetty and mostly and from the bullpen as well, and then by taking advantage of the very few opportunities that they're going to get. I mean, you bring up not liking to see Martin Maldonado bunt. We just complained earlier about what happens when Martin Maldonado swings away. His batting average is below 100 or whatever, right? So yeah, I think
they were bunting and hitting at the same time. Do one or the other. don't do both at the same time. Like, if you're going to sacrifice him, sacrifice him. If you're going to try to steal, steal. And I know that Nicky Lopez is 0-for-4, but it's irrelevant to the point that it's the strategy is to get a runner into scoring position for a team that can't hit. And if you're giving up outs for a team that can't hit, you're just closer to losing, to me. Just might as well take your chance. And I don't, I actually don't mind hitting into double plays. At least that means you're trying to actually execute and hit the ball instead of giving up an out. I don't like giving up outs to, especially a pitcher who was on the ropes right there. Stratton was, couldn't find the plate at all. And they're like, all right, let's give this out up to move him to second and third. And that guy is probably like, thank you. It's a reprieve.
Yeah, but it did, but it didn't work out. You know what I mean? He hit, you hit, you hit into a double play, and the inning's over. You know what I mean? And if that bunt was successful and they move over, he can't hit into that double play, and maybe even they get an extra run. So again, I'm not having the argument. I'm just saying I think he sees that that in the opposite way that you're seeing it right now.
I'm glad I'm on the other side of Pedro.
Yeah, I'm about to say that one. Herb disagrees with Pedro. I'm shocked. Yeah, I think what is most beneficial to the White Sox is that this was two different games. If you combine the 18 innings, it's 5-4 Royals, and they lose. So, you know, there you go. I just don't feel good that this offense really does seem just kind of hoping or wishing and praying that Paul DeJong or Gavin Sheets hits a homer. Like, that really does feel like the White Sox offense right now, and maybe someone will be on base, maybe Robbie Grossman will draw a walk, and there'll be a two-run homer, but it's a really, really disgusting product offensively to watch, and I wish Robbie Grossman would swing a little. I understand John Triffin getting heated on the 3-2 call to end the game one, but hey, Robbie Grossman, I don't think, took a single swing in that game, so it's maybe just beneficial to not leave it up to the umps and foul that one off if you don't like that pitch. Anyways, I think the one thing that I wanted to bring up was Alejandro's comment. Herb has brought up this pattern, and I hope this isn't the case for the White Sox. But Herb, you kind of talked about, you know, you lose 5 straight, then you win one. You lose 6 straight, then you win one. You lose 7 straight, then you win one. Is this the current thing that's going on? Alejandro said, Sox lost 4, then won 1. Lost 5, then won 1. Lost 6, then won 1. So is this going to be 7 straight losses and the next win until April 26th? Day 2 of the NFL draft.
They're going against real teams. Philadelphia and Minnesota's not real, but, you know, on the road, all 7-0.
Minnesota's probably ready to face the White Sox. Hey, my favorite stat was from Josh Nelson. If the Royals won this game, they would have won the season series with the Sox by mid-April. So, thankfully, the White Sox and Davey Garcia were able to close this one out. But I don't know. I think it's going to be ugly. I know Minnesota's probably excited to see the White Sox. I don't think that Tampa's always been kind to the Sox. I hope that's not the actual back and forth, lose 5, win 1, lose 6, win 1, but it does feel that desperate with this offense.
I don't know what Philly's going to do. Like they might, like, the White Sox are doing run prevention, right? They're pitching well, not hitting well, but Philly, we know, crushes the ball. And if they have either of those two starting pitchers at the top of their lineup, it's going to be over for the White Sox. They might not get a hit.
Wheeler and Nola are pitching Saturday and Sunday.
And I saw Ranger Suarez pitch either yesterday or today, so maybe...
Spencer Turnbull is on Friday. Oh. No, that's my guy. I wanted Spencer Turnbull.
Detroit Tigers?
Yeah, I thought that was going to be a Banny project. And he's looking great. He's got a 180 ERA. He'd be the third best pitcher for the White Sox right now.
Best pitcher. He'd
be the third best pitcher for the White
ERA
Sox.
ERA wise?
No, my vibe wise. Because Nastrini and Cannon are one. But no, I hope that's not the back and forth, because obviously that would just be ugly watching 7 straight losses. We'll talk about the Philly series tomorrow on our off day show. I guess the biggest other news that we haven't gotten to yet, and this wasn't in game 1 or game 2, but you guys were able to chat with Yoan Moncada pregame, and he had some surprising news.
I don't know how surprising it is. He'll be rehabbing in Arizona, if that's what you're referring to as surprising news. But
the timeline seems a little early. No, just because it seemed so, like, I don't know, end all be all with that injury. It seemed like it was going to be 3 to 6 months. It feels like maybe the rehab process is starting earlier than maybe the Sox thought, or?
No, I think that it's starting now, and I think it's going to take a long time. I think it's going to take, 3 months, right? I mean, we're talking about late July, probably, when he comes back. Now, again, he's thankful that he's going to be coming back. I think that there was a fear from not just him, but everybody with the White Sox when it originally happened, that it could be a season-ending injury. And now you've got that timeline moved up dramatically, right? I mean, it's or the instead of being at the upper extreme of it, it's just the lower extreme, which is good news for him and good news for the White Sox, who could use his bat if he's healthy, obviously. They won't get it for a while. But no, he's going to be in Arizona for some time rehabbing that injury. And I think the idea is to maybe make it just, hey, you go to work every day and your job is rehabbing this injury. It's not, you know, you don't have to come to the ballpark or travel with the team or, you know, have to sit through the games and be reminded of what you can't be out there doing, right? It's just go off to Arizona, rehab your injury, and he'll be out there until he's ready to get back into games. You would imagine there would be a rehab assignment of some sort at the end of that. But again, we're talking about July and it's still April.
Got nothing else, John?
You got nothing else? The 18 innings of baseball fried your brain?
I mean, it's just, what else is there to talk about? Like,
more bunts.
I mean, Gavin Sheets, we could talk about him, how great he is, but we already did. It's like, I don't know when we get a full lineup, like when Luis comes back and they're going to have Tommy Pham in this game. You got to get bats for Gavin Sheets, and the only place I can see the bats for Gavin Sheets is at first base.
No. Where did he play twice today, Herb? He played 18 innings in right field today.
But you have, like, Tommy Pham in right field, I would assume, at that time. Like, when that happens,
they're putting that 36-year-old man in center field. They're going to have him running around.
Like when
But
like,
not for long.
I hope not.
I mean, at least 3 months.
But I would
Tommy Pham will play 60 games with the White Sox.
Why would Luis Robert Jr. not play center field?
Well, isn't he hurt until July? When is he going to come back?
No. 6 weeks.
Like 6 weeks.
What is that?
Like May.
May.
Yeah.
Like late, the middle. Like, yeah, like end of May. Yeah.
All
right. He's still going to play 60 games with the White Sox. I mean, who's going to play until he comes back center field? Is it going to be Dominic Fletcher?
Yeah.
Every game?
Falling down? Misplaying balls?
I don't know. I mean, I'm fine with Gavin playing the outfield. He didn't look horrible. But
actually made some good catches today.
Yeah.
A couple good catches.
It's just, I don't know where Pham's going to play. Because Sheets has to be in the lineup. It doesn't seem like Vaughn's going to get benched. So, hey, I mean, you got a left
field. Aloy's going to play.
Left field of Benintendi. You got Aloy at DH, Tommy Pham in center, Gavin Sheets in right field, and Andrew Vaughn at first base. Sounds like a lineup to me.
Who's going
to
get on base? Because I got an on-base guy on the bench now with Robbie Grossman.
No, he can't swing.
Okay.
So, I mean, pitchers have realized, I can throw it in the zone and it won't be a ball because it'll be a strike. And usually strikes lead to strikeouts.
They do.
And
he had two today.
And Robbie Grossman.
The game he played. He had three all day. Only played half a game.
All right. Well, Vinny's probably sick of being at the ballpark. Let's get him home. Follow him at Vinny Duber. He's our CHGO White Sox beat writer. That's Herb Lawrence. You can follow him at Ecknerwall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. And I'm Sean Anderson. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. You can follow the show at CHGO_White Sox. Thank you to everyone for watching. Hit that like button. Thank you to Sarah for producing the show. We will talk to you tomorrow for our off day show at 3 o'clock. Goodbye.
We all silly like the mayor.